Does a normal amylase rule out pancreatitis? Hello and welcome to this week's Urgent Bite, brought to you by the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose, and today I want to talk briefly about pancreatitis presenting to urgent care. Back as a fully qualified yet incredibly green and undercooked house officer, I will always remember a patient with pancreatitis. They'd been referred in by a GP, and I'd taken the call. As was the system at that hospital, the patient was admitted from the GP directly to the surgical ward, and I got paged when they had arrived. I remember the excruciating pain the patient was in, the posture they were adopting, and just how unwell they looked. In large part due to the extremely experienced ward sister directing things, we got the patient settled with IV opiates and started IV fluids, and sure enough, the amylase came back significantly raised. The patient had gallstone pancreatitis and spent a few days with us before being discharged home. Now, the reason for sharing this is that I have been thinking about another case of pancreatitis, which has had me reflect on how we might diagnose this condition in urgent care. It was a person with 2 days of epigastric pain with no radiation. They were stable, but had not settled with various oral analgesic options at home. They were uncomfortable, but not in excruciating pain. Due to the time of day, I was unable to get any blood work back in time before the clinic closed, so I had to make the decision to refer the patient to the surgical team as an undetermined epigastric pain. This is quite common in an urgent care setting, having to make a call with limited information, often at the start of a patient's journey through a condition. But for me, I could not make a definitive diagnosis, and the patient was not suitable to be sent home, I felt. I made sure to follow up to see what the outcome was, and upon doing this, the diagnosis was early pancreatitis. But what intrigued me, and made me reflect on this condition, was the diagnosis was made on imaging, and they had a very normal amylase. Pancreatitis is diagnosed, according to the revised Atlanta criteria, with two of the following three criteria present. Firstly, abdominal pain, suggestive of pancreatitis. Secondly, a raised amylase or lipase at 3 times the normal value. And thirdly, findings on imaging suggestive of pancreatitis. So this got me thinking. Had I had access to bloods in this patient, would that have changed the management? Would I have sent them home with a normal amylase, reassured that they did not have pancreatitis? Well, no, because according to the Atlanta criteria, if I thought the patient had the right pain for pancreatitis, then an amylase or lipase would not rule out the diagnosis, and they would need imaging to complete the trio of criteria. Which brings me back to my memory of an acute pancreatitis case as a new doctor. The pain they were in was so severe and classically radiated to the back and required lots of morphine to settle that this was a fairly textbook case. But as with many things in medicine, classic and obvious things are obvious. But how often are the waters a little murkier? And how often is it a feeling that prompts us to act? A sixth sense, if you like. So on reflecting about this, it's made me realise that unless you have access to suitable imaging in your urgent care, an amylase is not a useful test for us to perform. Because if you're doing the test because you think the patient might have pancreatitis, you must therefore have thought that the pain is suggestive of pancreatitis. So that is one criteria already out of three. A raised amylase of 3 times might then give you the necessary second criteria to make the diagnosis, but if it's not raised, or not 3 times normal, then you've not ruled out the diagnosis until you also have imaging. So, unless I have access to imaging, an amylase in an urgent care setting is not a useful test for me to do, and so we should really consider why we're doing it at all. Now, I've linked in the show notes to a good article from the American Family Physician, which is worth reading. And if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or corrections, email podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. Now, we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then. But for now, thanks for listening.